in the right circle, Pacioretty. The lefty on the right boards. Shovels up top, Theodore Risker, tipped on goal, save. Stone, a rebound, score! Mark Stone, power play goal! Knights take the lead, 1-0. He'll dump it in and go for a change. Carlson and Smith stay on as they go. Oh, a turnover! They score! William Carlson, Riley Smith on the forecheck, and Martin Jones is beat again. Stone yanks it down to the right side. Pacioretty, center, score! It's Cody Glass! Pacioretty finds Cody. It's his first in the National Hockey League. 3-1 Golden Knights. Vegas ahead, 2-0. Smith with Carlson. Carlson for Smith. He scores! Tic-tac-toe! 4-1 Golden Knights. Bring it up. Shorthanded goal number one on their third shorthanded scoring chance of the day.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Yeah, let's go, Las Vegas, here on this Thursday. How you doing? Good to see you. See ya, sorta. See you here, whatever. You're here, I'm here. We're here for the next hour here on the Mac Attack, and we are coming off what was a very memorable opening to Season 3 out there at T-Mobile. We have plenty of hockey talk to get to over the next hour, but coming up in about a half an hour, I'm going to be joined by our pal from the Reviewer Journal. You hear her every week. You're going to be going out to London in about 6-7 hours. Heidi Fang from the Reviewer Journal. She's going to be stopping by to talk a little Raiders versus Bears, which is going to be going down on Sunday. Obviously, that very early game because, well, it's in London. So we'll catch up with her, get her thoughts on the game. Khalil Mack, Vontaze Burfict, and all things Raiders versus Bears. But right now, I mean, let's be honest. We know what we're getting to. There needs to be no pause, no wait. Let's hit it. It's time for some hockey talk.
It's the opening round.
Finish him.
Brought to you by VIP Collision.
Round one, fight.
As I hear the bed music, Magnum, and welcome back, Magnum. Magnum was out yesterday as he was overseeing the VGK special opening day show.
Yeah, busy day.
Busy day, yes. You were at the arena last night as well.
Yes, yes. And at practice yesterday morning. So
chaos.
Basically, day started about 10:30, did not end till close to midnight.
So you're dead.
Yes.
Magnum
and
is
up at 5:30 this morning.
Magnum is only here in body. His mind, it might be somewhere else.
What's the Rolling Stones song? No Sympathy for the Devil?
Yeah. Exactly. So, listen, it was an exciting night. It was an energetic night. It was a winning night as the Golden Knights obviously take home the victory. But I was just saying, as I was sitting there listening to the bed music for opening round, I just remembered it's hockey season again. And in hockey season, this is normally when we have the nightcap. So we will be bringing back the nightcap for all future games going forward. This is going to be the nightcap, all right? But it's also going to take the space of the opening round because it was game one. It was against the Sharks. Cody Glass scored his first goal. Nate Schmidt might be injured. All the lines played great. There is so much we are about to get to as we recap this game. First of all, before we get to all of that, and those are kind of the general notes of what we'll be hitting on, right? I just want to hit on the atmosphere, man. You were out there early. You were up there in Hyde Lounge. I showed up about an hour before the game, and I'm going to tell you what. I told this story on the press box this morning. I'm going to tell it again because it bears repeating. I don't know what sort of quantum leap, voodoo, time warp, wormhole magic that happened last night at 5 o'clock, but I got done with my satellite show with Misha Tate at 5, all right? I drove from here, which is on the west side, you know, Flamingo and 215, whatever, right? Drove all the way home to Sunset Station area, Green Valley, right? Picked up my wife, drove all the way back down to the Strip and the Park MGM, and I was parked at Park MGM by 5:58. Magnum, I got off of my show, drove home, picked up my wife during rush hour, drove all the way back down, and was parked within 58 minutes.
That almost seems impossible.
I know this. I don't know how it happened.
That is like the Cleveland Browns winning the Super Bowl. That is Kansas City Royals. Oh, wait. They did win the World Series. See, so it is possible.
That would be like the Chicago Cubs. Yeah.
Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, right?
That's unbelievable. I kid you not. I had to go over to Sam Boyd Stadium on Saturday morning. I did a charity event out there.
Yeah.
I left my house at 7:30 to be there by 8. Wouldn't you know, once I got past Eastern on the 215, slow down to like 50 miles an hour. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
7:30 in the morning.
There's no
on
order.
A Saturday.
Yeah, there's no order. Like, you'll go to McCarran, like, at a Wednesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it'll be bumper-to-bumper traffic. Yep. You go on a Friday night at 7 p.m., no yep. one's there. Wait, how? Where's the logic to this stupid city?
Yes.
I'm going down Frank Sinatra. It is 90 minutes before the game. I could have rolled that boulder from Raiders of the Lost Ark down Frank Sinatra, and you wouldn't have put a scratch of paint anywhere.
That's almost, you know what? Actually, mine was pretty similar because I didn't hit any traffic on the 15. You know, normally, because I come from the 215, so normally I'll hit a little traffic at that turn.
Yep.
And then the most idiotic highway interchange in America, the 215 from the 15 to the 15 north, where you literally will ride for 4 miles before you can get onto the 15.
Right.
And it slows down the one lane. But if you're lucky and you're going down Frank Sinatra, you really never hit traffic unless there's a game.
It wasn't.
Yeah, but see, now when I got into the parking garage, normally I'm able to park in a specific area.
Yeah.
There were so many cars in the garage, and I got there about 6 o'clock. There were so many cars in the Excalibur garage that I had to park all the way in the back. So I'm thinking maybe people just got there really, really early.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because when I was driving down, right, and I'm looking at no cars, well, there was tons. Gaggles of fans on the sides of the roads walking to various places. So yeah. I'm with you. I think they just either called off early, whatever the case may be, they were there early.
And you know, you kind of alluded to the crowd, too.
Yeah.
It's a very special atmosphere in that building, especially
I've never seen anything like
especially
it, yeah.
on opening night, especially against the Sharks.
Yep.
I mean, they bring it every – I mean, obviously that first year, you know, they've just kind of – And I don't want to say they've got lucky, because obviously that first year you can't describe
we built an identity.
But that second year when they opened up the season, they raised the banner for the Pacific Division Championship, Western Conference champions, special atmosphere. Last night, you bring in the hated team, the team that for 3 or 4 months since that season ended on, I believe it was April 23rd, that people have hated. They wanted to see their
public enemy number
their
one.
Their heroes go out there. Yeah. It was almost like, you know, you're a big wrestling guy. It's almost like when Hogan finally beat the Million Dollar Man, he finally vanquished the villain. It's like, okay, this is what we pay for. This is what the fans want to see. And it's just a special atmosphere in that building, especially on special nights like last night.
You talk about, you know, wanting to vanquish the villain, in this case, the vaunted and hated San Jose Sharks, you know.
They are the heel.
Oh, 100%.
And the funny thing is they view us as the heel, which is kind of sports. Well, not us, but they view Vegas in general as the heel.
Yeah, no, that's sports.
They thumb down, but I think they look at the whole city.
Yeah, 100%.
They hate
a real
this city.
Yeah, not a real city, not a real sports
You don't
town,
deserve a hockey team. You stole one of our Bay Area football teams.
Yep. No, for sure. And listen, and this is what I'm about to get to in terms of the away crowd. There was a point where Vegas was still finding its hockey identity. I don't care what anybody says. I'm a season ticket holder from the beginning, and I'm a lower bowl season ticket holder. So I don't care what anyone says. The lower bowl is a certain type of crowd. They'll leave earlier. They aren't as passionate as the upper bowl. I don't care what anyone
says. They call it wine and cheese crowd.
I've been to the majority of games, every single one in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights, and there is definitely a difference. And in those early years, especially the first half of the first year, and then when there was money to be made in the second year, even more so, people were giving up their tickets. And there were a lot of away fans.
Yes, Edmonton brings in a ton of fans.
Oh,
Detroit,
Boston, Chicago, all the
traditional
the hockey towns.
Yes,
they kill it. Even like Buffalo,
Winnipeg brings in a lot of people.
They love it, right? I didn't see.
Oh, I saw a few, but not
a lot. A lot last night.
They were few and far between.
They were honestly, when you think about proximity, when you think about the hot ticket, when you think about how many people wanted to see this game, right? You think back to the clinching game of the Stanley Cup when the Washington fans really turned out and a lot of red in the building, right? I'm sure there were San Jose fans that really wanted to be at this game to take in the rivalry, and they couldn't get in because, at least best I could tell, Golden Knights fans weren't willing to give up their ticket. This was a Vegas crowd thoroughly, which made me feel good because, well, I mean, it's good for everyone involved.
Yeah, and we'll see Tuesday night when Boston, one of those traditional teams,
uh-huh,
comes in.
Uh-huh.
Team coming off a Stanley Cup Finals loss. So the teams that lost the last two Stanley Cup Finals will play very early in the season. And, of course, last night, Washington and St. Louis, the last two winners of the Stanley Cup, played. But, you know, Tuesday night will be interesting. I think we have established an identity as a hockey town, though.
No question.
Like, you know, I saw so many local celebrities tweeting about the Golden Knights. Like, I can't. Like, Bryson Stott, former UNLV baseball player. He's now one of the top prospects in the Phillies organization. Had a tremendous year for Williamsport. I believe it was an all-star in the New York Penn League. Tweeting about, I cannot wait to get into the fortress. You look on the screen before the game, Wayne Newton, Carrot Top.
Sure.
Bryce Harper, yeah. Who they've had to edit, right? They haven't gotten a new one. They had to edit out. This is Bryce Harper of the Washington Nationals. Nope, no more.
Right.
The Killers, right? Imagine Dragons.
Billy from ZZ Top.
Billy Gibbons.
Yep.
Oh, he's great.
Yep.
Man, I love those guys. They're awesome.
As you said, we're getting an identity.
And the thing is, I was thinking about it going in last night.
Yeah.
This town, and maybe it's the town, but it's the only place I've seen where the fans themselves can become celebrities.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've got the Wolverine guy, Jason.
I was going to say Wolverine.
Right? Like if
my favorite is the doctor guy that the bald guy that always dances like this. No one can see me. I'm like doing the dance that he does. Dude's in every game.
Yes. Warmies. Yeah. His name is Christopher Green.
Chris Green, I didn't know your name. I thought you were. I always called you Doctor Guy because you look like a doctor. I have no idea if he's a doctor.
Yeah, I don't think he is, but he does have a doctor look to him.
The fact that you know his name,
yes,
and it's like we could just say, yeah, Wolverine guy, yeah, Doctor Guy, and literally, I'm just mocking the dance he does.
Yes.
He just puts his hands up and he does a raise the roof sort of thing. He's at every single and who are the guy who does the thing
with his head where he bobs it back and forth and he makes the sad face,
the face where he just.
Yeah, I mean, you can't see it, but
we're both doing it right now.
He's got this big frown on his face, and he's bobbing his head back and forth. And now his girlfriend, who sits next to him, is starting to do it. He is fantastic.
What about the brothers? The Canadian brothers? They wear the Canadian hat.
Yes, the one guy who used to look like he does look like Pierre-Edward Belmar.
Yeah, yeah, like, they look like
literally.
Belmar.
He looks just like him.
Yep. And they had
those guys are plumbers, by the way.
Well, they had a sign last night that said they had a San Jose Sharks logo that said. Underachieving since 1991.
Oh,
and
Wyshynski, awesome.
Greg Wyshynski, we had on the show yesterday, he actually caught a screen grab of it. You can check out his Twitter, at Wyshynski on Twitter. He posted it. He's like, this is the type of blank you can get away with when you've only been a team for three years, which I thought was great. But yeah, it is true. Like, we have our own fans. The identity is developing. And listen, we've got our players. They delivered last night, some familiar names and then some not so familiar names. And one of the bigger moments of the night, and which was a night filled with large moments. Like, don't take this the wrong way. My favorite moment of last night outside of the win and all that stuff, Cody Glass, the youngster, the 20-year-old, going out and getting the very first goal of his career. It came courtesy, and I do mean courtesy, because it was a hell of a pass, courtesy of Max Pacioretty on a cross-ice pass that went through three San Jose Sharks, landed right on the blade of Cody Glass, and he put it home. You could see, I talked about this a little bit on the other show, but you could absolutely, like, I don't know what your takeaway was from the crowd. Like, it was great, right? The pregame was great. It was raucous. It was loud. The loudest moment of the night for me was when the announcer told the crowd that and gave that announcement to everyone. Hey, and on the goal, number 9, in his very first goal in his career, he did that whole pomp and circumstance. Yep. And then when they dropped that Cody Glass line, that crowd absolutely erupted.
Yeah, it did. And I think for a couple of reasons, because I kind of feel like that was a moment that the team needed. Like, Nate Schmidt got injured.
100%. And let's say it took the life out of
the crowd.
I would say that came on the heels of
opening. They were already up 2-0.
Well, that's what I'm saying. First 5 minutes, boom, 2-0. Crowd's going nuts. Feels like T-Mobile's just like it used to be.
Yep.
Knights are scoring early. Everything's going great. And then
the life gets sucked out.
5 minutes later, the knee-to-knee collision on Couture and Nate
Schmidt. San Jose scores a goal.
Yep.
They came out, and you're like, oh boy, here we go. 2-1, start the second period.
Yeah, momentum
Vegas
was shifting.
Looked a little sluggish, and then Mark Stone makes a great defensive play, finds Max Pacioretty, and that pass was like, it was like practice.
Yep.
I mean, it was so smooth, and all Glass had to do was put his stick on the puck, and it was going. And Martin Jones had zero chance. I don't think any goalie.
Just tap it in. Tap.
And Pacioretty, man, he played a fantastic that whole line, actually.
Best line on the ice.
I mean, Mark Stone is just watch him. Like, next time you go to a game.
Yeah, not when he has the puck. Yes. Watch him when he doesn't
Watch him when
the
he doesn't.
Yes.
Watch him defensively. Yep. Watch him when he doesn't have the puck. He is, by far and away, the fact that he wasn't one of the top 20 players in the NHL is absolutely mind-boggling.
It's a joke.
I mean, he is so good at so many different aspects. And he scored the first goal last night.
Of course.
He set up the third goal with the great defensive play.
Yep.
He's gritty, right? Like, he's not afraid to mix it up.
You would hate to play him.
Yes.
He's a nightmare to play against.
Yeah, I have that's a perfect way to describe him. Yep. If you are an opposing team, that is he's a nightmare matchup.
Yep, he never stops. He's got the work ethic of a Cody Eakin and a third line guy trying to work his way up, right? And except he's a all-level A-plus star. All right, so let's hear from head coach Gerard Gallant, because he spoke. We're going to head back to Cody Glass, who last night, as I said, was really one of the main takeaways for me. Because, listen, when you get a first-round draft pick like Cody Glass, and in the case of Cody Glass, the first pick in Vegas Golden Knights history, tons of expectations. But we've been wondering now for a couple years, when is this kid going to come up? And when he does, what type of response is he going to have? What type of output is he going to have? How is he going to mesh with this team? Well, he certainly meshed quite well last night, and Gerard Gallant was on the front lines of that. Seemingly pretty happy for the kid. This is Coach Gallant after the game talking Cody Glass.
He was real good. Yeah, that's exactly what I expected this morning. So good for the kid, happy for him. He's got 81 more games to do it. But he was awesome. Good for him.
And he was awesome, and he was good for him. You know, I love hearing in between that. It's like he doesn't want to be too complimentary because it's a 20-year-old kid, you know what I mean? But what I also really liked is, like, hey, he's got 81 more to go, which I would imagine, because, listen, I don't know what Cody's contract situation is in terms of being sent up and sent down, but knowing that Gallant, by saying that, is kind of has you in the plans for 81, and he's kind of like giving you a nudge, and also kind of putting you over, to use a pro wrestling term, right? He's acknowledging the great job you did. We know Gallant's a player's coach, but I don't, you know, we also know that this team in general, from McPhee all the way down, they're not big on giving youngsters their chance, right? They like to let them marinate a little bit, which they did with Cody Glass. But he's back. He played a great game. And I don't want to be too hyperbolic, because as we sit here talking about Cody Glass, it is just one game. It could go a bunch of different ways with this kid. But big-time players deliver in big moments. Now, again, this is one game. I don't know if Cody Glass is going to be a big-time player. He was drafted as he was supposed to be a big-time player. But what you do want to see, right, is his first game, and he comes out, and he's all over the ice. He's playing gritty. But more specifically, he gets a goal in his first game. I mean, that's exactly what you want to see.
Yeah, and what he needs to do is he needs to give them a reason to not send him down.
Yep.
You know, make it impossible for them to send you down.
And like Perry did last year.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's playing between two guys who will do their very best to make sure he's not sent down.
And that's my thing, is I need to see Cody Glass on this line more. And I'm talking about on the line with Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone. And here's my case. When Cody Eakin gets healthy, okay, we're going to have decisions to make. When Alex Tuch gets healthy, we're going to have decisions to make. Whereas in the Vegas Golden Knights, right? The Golden Knights are going to have decisions to make. I think Cody, Paul Stastny, who is the one who dropped off the second line last night, right? He was playing on the third line. Paul Stastny doesn't need Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone. Paul Stastny can play on just about any line, and he's going to make those players around him much, much better because of his vision, his veteran status in the league, and just really the quality of player that he is. He's just that type of player, right? Cody Glass needs Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty. He needs them for two folds, right? He needs them from a physical standpoint, where they're just dynamic players who can just make them better.
Well, they're men.
Right, they're men, right? But also from the confidence, the mental aspect of knowing what the expectations aren't for you. Nothing falls on you. It's like Gallant said this in the postgame press conference as well, which we didn't hear from. He just essentially like, go out and be a kid. Have fun. You're going to make mistakes. Mark Stone's going to make mistakes. Veterans are going to make mistakes, right? Like, you're going to see the best of the best make mistakes. So just go out and have fun. That's what you need to do with Cody Glass. You need to make sure that he's having fun, the youngster's having fun, and the pressure isn't there for him. And when he's playing on a line with Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty, there is no pressure, right? There isn't. You just go out there and let the puck fall on your stick, because I promise you, Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone are going to get that puck on your stick. And another thing that I loved about Cody Glass last night, because you're 20-year-old, physicality is always an issue. You mentioned it. They asked him to bulk up in this offseason and put some pounds on, right? So he didn't get pushed around. I think in that first period, Magnum, he was 5 out of 6 in the faceoff circle.
Yeah, that's really important. I mean, that's one of those aspects that I think a lot of fans overlook.
Yep.
Winning faceoffs, but if you win faceoffs, you're going to stay in the league.
100%. And when you're doing it as a youngster against a veteran team like the San Jose Sharks, very good news for the Vegas Golden Knights. Obviously, the bad news, and we got about a minute left before we head off to Heidi Feng of the Review Journal, Nate Schmidt going down. Listen, Magnum, I've made the case. I don't think there is a more indispensable player outside of Marc-Andre Fleury than Nate Schmidt. I don't want to be hyperbolic here, and I know it's a different year, but Nate Schmidt going down, if this is at any sort of length, it could be pretty catastrophic, no?
Yeah, I think there's no other, there's no way to sugarcoat it. I mean, if he's not here for any length of time, we saw last year they were 8-12, I think, in the first 20 games without him.
Yep.
It's a tough, tough loss if he's not there, because now you're putting pressure on another young kid to step in and do a job that probably is pretty tough.
And we were already, listen, there were not a lot of questions coming into the season for this Vegas Golden Knights team, right? There really wasn't. The one concern that I think people may have had or you could point to was the blue line. And now you take Nate Schmidt out of the equation. Boy, not ideal. But listen, we will keep an eye on that. We will follow up on that as soon as we get news on Nate Schmidt's, obviously, injury. We will bring it to you. Right now, we're going to head off to break. We're going to put a plug on the hockey talk. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Heidi Feng from the Review Journal to get some NFL talk. And, of course, break down Raiders versus Bears coming up next here on the Mac Attack.
The Mac Attack returns in minutes on 920 The Game. It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, we are back, and right now we are joined for our weekly spot by, as I like to call her, the Swiss Army Knife of the Las Vegas media. She is a part of the Las Vegas Review Journal. You know her, you love her. It's Heidi Feng. Heidi, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. Just getting ready here to fly out to London.
So you are. They're not doing you any favors. You are on the last flight out of Las Vegas. I know Graney's already there. He's already posted up in London. A good portion of the media is already there. You're coming in a little bit late. What do you expect? I mean, hell, the Raiders got there like 5 days ago.
Yeah, I know. I'm expecting not to sleep. I'm expecting to not know what time of day it is. I'm expecting to have some fish and chips with some malt vinegar on there.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't mix mayonnaise with my fries, but, you know, I'm going to try to do things as the Londoners do. And ready for a big trip. I'm excited about this game.
Yeah, no, for sure. We'll get to the game for a second. But, see, you started with the fish and chips. You started talking about food, man. And, you know, it's hungry. I haven't got to eat my lunch yet. It's late in the day. Now I'm thinking about London food. You know what I mean? London gets a bad rap. Like, England in general, I feel like, gets a bad rap for their food. It is not bad. It's actually really, really good. I love that city. I am supremely jealous that you're about to be there in 24 hours.
I was really happy that I got to go on this trip because originally we weren't sure who was going to be able to go because we have a rather large staff that covers the Raiders.
Sure.
So to be able to be a part of it again this time after going out last year to Wembley and this year to Tottenham, it's going to be really something to see both of these stadiums, how the game is played out in these soccer pitches. I'm just looking forward to getting to see another side that I didn't get to see last time. So I'm sorry, I don't want to rub it in. I'm happy to go. I'm excited to do this. And I'm putting on those air miles, you know.
That's right. Cashing checks and kicking ass and taking names. We love it. We love it. We're here with Heidi Feng from the Review Journal. All right, listen, I don't know what I want to start with, like the game itself or the news of the week surrounding the game. I guess we'll start with the news of the week. We'll head back a few days. We'll go back to Sunday. And, of course, I'm referencing Vontaze Burfict, obviously the hit there in Indianapolis, resulting in a season-long suspension. I believe the last I heard was that the appeal will be heard this upcoming Tuesday by the NFL. Listen, Heidi, there's a lot of opinions going on in this hit, a lot of opinions going on about the suspension. We talked to a lot of former players here on our various station groups, from Mark McMillan to Stanford Rout. Like, these are people that, you know, played the game. They were defenders. They obviously come from a different era. They don't like the suspension. We're different, right? We're media, and in a lot of cases, we're fans. We're entering a new era of the NFL and CTE and brain injuries. But a year sounds like a long time. It is a long time. It doesn't sound like a long time. It is a long time. So, Heidi Feng, what was your read on the suspension? Fair or not?
Well, okay. I don't think that a year was fair. I do think that Vontaze Burfict has a history of late and dirty hits, which has kind of forced the NFL's hand here to dole out that type of suspension that is just one that I don't think he'll come back from. I don't think we see Vontaze Burfict again in the NFL after this suspension, should it go through without the appeal being turned over. So when I saw the hit, I thought that's not the way that you come in to tackle a guy, but I didn't think that he was doing it to be dirty. We've seen late hits from Vontaze Burfict in the past. I think one of the most brutal was that one on Antonio Brown.
Sure.
And you've seen how he goes about it when he executes those types of things. But I really, honestly, don't think that was his intention. Do I think he mishandled the tackle and came in wrong? Yep. But when you're going at the speed that these guys go at the NFL, I think he wasn't accounting for LaMarcus Joyner being in on that hit, and he just came in to tackle the guy. This way that the NFL has become, you can't execute a hit that way. And with Vontaze Burfict's past, is absolutely going to be something that he has to pay for. Now, the suspension, I think because he didn't execute the hit properly and because of his past, I was expecting like 4 games, and I thought that was going to be kind of a strict suspension. When it came down to a year, I was really, truly surprised.
We're here with Heidi Fang from the Review Journal. Now, you said, Heidi, obviously you talk about the year suspension being a surprise. You mentioned there, after this year, you could see you don't think that Vontaze Burfict is going to play in the NFL again. I don't think you're alone in that assessment. I kind of hinted at that as well. But, Heidi, I mean, I get it. You know what I mean? The Oakland Raiders are kind of like that last stop. You know, we know this with Vontaze Burfict. There weren't a lot of suitors for him heading into this year. The Raiders signed him to a one-year deal because, well, there was worry there, right? There's a lot of baggage that comes with Vontaze Burfict. If he doesn't play in the NFL again, I would have to imagine that would be a huge deterrent going forward to other players. Like that would be a benchmark moment in the NFL. I understand that it might not be a league-wide credo or edict to, hey, don't sign Vontaze Burfict, but I think it would just be a collective, you know, understanding amongst the 32 teams that this guy is more trouble than he's worth. And that's surprising and also kind of concerning, Heidi, when you look at it from the standpoint that there are domestic abusers, there are people that have been accused of rape, in some cases the people that had very shadowy past and the likes of Aaron Hernandez that turned out to be obviously worst case scenario and a double murderer. So to have all that happen in the NFL and then kind of have this player like Vontaze Burfict be blacklisted for a play that would have been, you know, heralded and celebrated 20 years ago, it's a bit of weird mixed messaging that I don't know if I'm completely comfortable with.
I 100% agree with you. There's no consistency, and that's something that the NFL needs to be better with. Now, when you talk about people who've had checkered pasts and things that I guess are concerning when you look at their makeup, who they are, and, you know, let's take Tyreek Hill, for instance, all these allegations that he's abused his child, that he kicked his pregnant girl in the stomach when she was pregnant. Now, that one actually goes some time back, but I think, you know, anybody scouting him was aware of it. And here he is, you know, although he's hurt, he's playing in the NFL. And, you know, they kind of let that one go, which was a surprise to me when you heard the tapes that were out on the radio station over the airwaves. Now, there has to be some sort of authenticity to a recording of that nature. And I'm hoping that if as this furthers along, that it, I guess if he's, you know, convicted in a court, that the NFL can relook at that and reexamine where he belongs in the NFL. But yeah, there's been no consistency at all. And I think that's something that they need to do when it comes to head hits. I mean, we saw in the Eagle games, even though it was his own teammate, the Sendejo hit that, you know, hurt his own teammate that knocked him out, and Maddox hasn't, you know, been able to return yet. So that's something that when you look at these kinds of hits and how they happen, okay, so it was his own teammate, but should he still not get a penalty for that hit? You know, and there really wasn't one. So I think these are things that the NFL definitely needs to reexamine, and how, if they're going to say, okay, you can't target the head when you tackle, that they need to stay consistent across the board when they dole out suspensions or when they dole out penalties or how this is looked at, even if you have a history of being a repeat offender. Where is the sense of, okay, we go two games, do we go four games, do we go half a season, do we go full season? There has to be some sort of rhyme or reason to it.
Well, I don't disagree. Let's turn the page. Let's get to the actual game itself, because this is a big game. It's a big game for the Chicago Bears in London, obviously, because they have playoff aspirations and a stacked NFC North. And it's a big game for the Oakland Raiders coming off an early season victory in Indianapolis that a lot of people, I think, were surprised by going in there and, you know, taking care of the Colts the way they did. So, listen, Heidi, the Raiders got to town, and I say town, they got to London very, very early. I mean, they left almost immediately after that game in Indianapolis on Sunday. Now the Bears are arriving. I don't even know if they're there yet. I think they get there on Friday. So who does that favor when you look at this, at least in terms of timing and getting to London? Where does the needle lie in terms of that?
Oh, I definitely think that it favors the Raiders. You look at the time difference. It's 9 or 8 hours from the Pacific Coast. So from East Coast time, you're looking at about, 6 hours in difference. And so it's not that much when you come from Chicago, but I still think that you're going to be groggy. You're going to need to adjust. You're going to need to feel out the time zone and not feel like it's 3 a.m. when you're on the field. So last year, the Raiders didn't do this. And this year they have, because I think they learned from that experience of going to London last year that you can't just show up on a Friday and be fully prepared for the conditions. It was rather, damp out there on the field because it had been raining a lot. So these are different types of fields. They're not the same as playing on an old weather field. Or, I mean, for the Bears, hey, it's probably like maybe Soldier Field. But, but for a team that is coming from, obviously, the East Coast, I just think that, it's going to take some adjustment time, and I think the Bears should have given themselves a little bit more time to get there.
Well, that'll be interesting. As we talk about the Chicago Bears, number 52, Khalil Mack, he makes his return. Well, it's not his return, but he's facing his old team. He's facing his good buddy, Derek Carr. He said all the right things in the media. Listen, I feel like Khalil is one of those guys who he's going to be motivated on any Sunday. I mean, we've seen this on game day. I mean, he's a monster, truly a monster of the Midway. I can't imagine the version of Khalil Mack we're going to get when he faces off against the team that didn't deem him valuable enough to sign him to a long-term contract. What say you?
Oh, I say that he's going to have to face a different O-line this time around, and people who maybe even if he did face them, that he is not familiar with who they've become. Like, for instance, Colton Miller, he's somebody that I think looks stronger and better than he did last year. You have Trent Brown, then he is just a human wall. There's no way of penetrating past his force. I mean, I'm sure a guy like Khalil Mack going to find a way around this offensive line at one point or the other. And it's a team he knows, so they're going to have to come up with some schemes, I think, that he's not able to zone in on, because if he's like, oh, I've seen that play before, he might be able to know when it's coming the next time around and just figure out how to get around it. So, and to get the car and stop the play. But I think that he's definitely somebody who is talented no matter what, when you look at his ability. So even if you're double teaming a guy like Khalil Mack, he's just going to keep coming at you, and eventually the bull is going to get the matador. He's going to get through. He's just somebody that is, I think, at the highest level at his position when you look at the players in the NFL today. And it's going to be a big thing for Gruden, too, to try to be able to get this win and to prove, like, okay, my guys and this new team that I'm trying to put together was worth it and was worth getting rid of him and trading him. So I think that that's something that is going to be definitely all eyes on as we go into London.
Well, very interesting. Obviously, listen, there's the Khalil Mack factor, right? We're all interested in that. We're here with Heidi Fang, the Review Journal, by the way. She'll be in London. She's leaving tonight, so she'll be in London soon. She'll be in London tomorrow, which will be, I don't know the time difference, but got a big weekend ahead of you. Not as big as Derek Carr. Listen, he's got a lot to prove. He is obviously facing this vaunted Chicago defense. He's doing it about a 5-point underdog right now. But listen, Heidi, we've seen this from this team. We saw it with three quarters pace with the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Outside of that second quarter. This is a team, the point that I'm getting at, they can surprise people. Are they going to surprise us on Sunday? You think the Raiders can get it done?
I'm not really leaning that way right now. Although they have got there early, and I think they're going to come up with some plans and schemes that are going to work out for them maybe in the first quarter. I just think the Bears defense is too good. I think that actually Chase Daniel held his own on the offense, and they've got a pretty good running back there that's going to be able to take advantage of this linebacker situation here with the Raiders, and having maybe a guy like Nicholas Moreau playing there instead of somebody like Vontaze Perfect, you know. So I think that's going to be advantageous for the Bears. And I just think that even though they're getting there late, and I was saying all that, and how groggy they're going to be, I think the team and the defense right now is just collectively better than the Raiders. And you guys can all say I'm wrong if the Raiders pull off. I think it would be a low-scoring game, you know, maybe a 17-13 type of score. But the Raiders can easily flip that if they can, you know, make the end zone theirs and get these conversions on third down that we're so desperately lacking in that Kansas City game. That's going to be a big key in this game is can they convert and keep chains moving.
Yeah, I think the under for that game or the over-under for that game is like 40.5. I'm definitely leaning the under on that one. I'm with you. I'm not saying the Raiders can't win, but it is definitely going to be a low-scoring game. Listen, you hit it on Chase Daniel, right? You just fill it in for Mitch Trubisky. Not sure, Bears fans, the extent of Mitch Trubisky's injury. Listen, we talked to a lot of people on various shows, Heidi, and the consensus seems to be, at least for the past few days, is that there is not a huge difference between Chase Daniel and Mitch Trubisky, and some people are making the fact or the point, at least in their opinion, that Chase Daniel actually might be a better quarterback for the Chicago Bears. What say you? Is there going to be a drop off, or in some cases, what do you think? Could it actually be an improvement?
Well, it was for my fantasy team. It was Allen Robinson is concerned in his 77 yards last week. No, I mean seriously, that is the best that he's seen in the past 4 weeks. So I think that, you know, Chase Daniel definitely capable of keeping this offense moving. And I think that I wouldn't say it's much of an improvement, but Trubisky looked like he was struggling a lot this year. And it wasn't just going through his reads and his progressions when he's trying to throw the ball. It was a lot of hesitation. And that was something I didn't see through Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel was like, okay, this is the play I'm running. I'm going to show my confidence here in the pocket. I'm going to drop back. I'm going to find the guy. Oh, he's not open. Okay, I'll go to my second read. Bang, there we are. Completion. And it wasn't this a scattered look. I think that was something that I saw from Trubisky in the first couple games is just either frustration, like he's expecting too much of himself and he's just not able to get it done. And I think for Trubisky, it had more to do with his head and his confidence than it did to do with his level of play. And that was something that for Chase Daniel, I didn't see from him at all. He was just like, all right, I'm in the game, let's get it going. And he was making things happen there. So, yeah, I think it might be just a slight improvement, but not much.
All right, let's flip it. Listen, we talk plenty about the Raiders and Bears. That's going down Sunday. You're going to be up there in London. I know people are going to be following along and checking out your coverage at Heidi Fang on Twitter. But listen, there's a game going down tonight. I don't think you're going to see much of it because you're going to be, at least if you're not going to be in the air, you're going to be getting ready to be in the air. But I'm obviously talking about the Thursday night game. L.A. Rams in Seattle. Listen, this game opened at with the Rams, I should say, being about a 1.5-point favorite. That line has shifted almost 360 degrees to where now the Seattle Seahawks are almost a 1.5 favorite at various books around town. That's quite a switch. Listen, they're 3-1 and 3-1. This is a really exciting matchup. When you look at Seahawks versus Rams, what are your kind of like keys to victory? And who do you think is going to come out top tonight on Thursday Night Football?
It's going to come down to turnovers and who can prevent them from happening on the offensive side of the ball. When you look at like Goff last week throwing 2 picks and with the defense not being able to stop the Bucs, and they got 55 points on the Rams. If you would have told me that was going to happen in that game, I would have laughed in your face. So the fact that we saw that happen last week and the Rams have to pull it together on a short turnaround, I see the Seahawks in that 3.5 looking good right now. I think they have better defense. I think Russell Wilson is a little bit more seasoned at the quarterback position, if you will.
Yeah.
But they can't ever, ever deny the coaching genius of Sean McVay. Sometimes, especially with an opponent that he's very familiar with, like the Seattle Seahawks, somebody that he's seen a lot because it is an opponent within the NFC West, I think he can come up with the right game plan to be able to get past them. But just from the frenetic play that I saw out of the Rams, I don't think they get it done this week.
All right, we'll end on this. We'll fast forward past Sunday, and we'll go over to Monday Night Football, right? Your team from the Bay Area, not the Oakland Raiders, talking to the San Francisco 49ers, a team that I think people had hopes and expectations for in 2019-2020, but maybe not at this level. Flip side of that, the hopes and expectations of the Cleveland Browns were through the roof, I should say, a little underperforming to start the season. I'm still relatively high on the Cleveland Browns. Maybe I'm just delusional. Maybe I was buying too much into the hype, but I'm definitely buying into the hype of the San Francisco 49ers. I'm very interested in this game. When you look at this game, Browns versus 49ers going down on Monday Night Football, what are you looking at, and who do you think's the realer of these two potential contenders in 2019?
As an objective person that's looking from the outside in, is really going to come down to the running game, I think, in this one, because Jimmy Garoppolo has shown that, you know, he favors his tight end and that he'll spread it out lightly between those wide receivers, but they've kind of had this three-headed monster when it comes to the running game that's been able to attack and penetrate the goal line and do very well at making defenders guess. And, you know, the Browns have one of those great defenders in Myles Garrett, who I think is a playmaker that can get out there and find, you know, guys out in open space and make tackles when need be and to get in there and to get past the O-line. He's definitely somebody to watch. But when you look at the Cleveland Browns and, you know, Odell Beckham getting frustrated and having issues like he did last week against the Ravens, that was kind of crazy. Does he become a factor or a non-factor in this game? Because he's somebody that you expect always to be a playmaker, but we've seen the Jekyll and Hyde out of him. So if you can't use your big star on offense effectively, that's something the Niners can easily take away. So that's why I think it'll come down to the run game, and I think the Niners have a better attack in that position, and that, I think, is going to be the big factor in this game.
All right, Heidi Fang from the Review Journal. We appreciate it, Heidi. Normally we get into some fantasy football talk, but we just don't have enough time for that. So we will let everyone reset. We will let them walk blindly into their matchups this week. Listen, they know what they're doing. They got their fantasy information all over the place, but you are one of the best. And we'll close on this. How are your fantasy teams doing? Because you are a guru, but we know sometimes fantasy football, it can be a cruel lady. So how has it been treating you this season so far?
In my big league, which I'm rather proud of, right now I'm holding strong in second place, and I got the highest scoring team last week with about, and this year doesn't sound high because this league is much different than any other, and one day maybe I'll break down all the rules, but 96 points, and I blew everybody else out. Everyone else is hovering around 70, so I'm doing pretty strong in that one. Otherwise, in my Yahoo leagues, I've had a little bit of hot and a little bit of cold, and I'm going to blame it on the injury bug because I've had guys like Andrew Luck and Saquon Barkley and T.Y. Hilton and Steven and Joe Gude. Keep the list going. They've been on my team. And, it's been a struggle.
You know how to pick them, Heidi Fang. You know how to pick them. Hey, safe flight to London, all right?
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. That is Heidi Fang. You can find her out at the Review Journal. Read her, see her over there. And you can, of course, follow her on Twitter at Heidi Fang. All right. That will do it for us. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, plenty more Mac Attack coming your way. All right, welcome back here in on the Mac Attack. We got about a minute left. I want to say thanks to our guest, Heidi Fang. If you missed any part of that conversation, head out to lvsportsnetwork.com. After the show, we'll have it podcasted up for you. You can check it out. Of course, you can get it on Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff as well. But make sure to go on lvsportsnetwork.com. Forget those other ones. Go listen to them over there. All right, Thursday Night Football going down tonight. LA Rams, Seattle Seahawks. We will cover that tomorrow. But right now, real quick pick from Magnum. What do you think, Magnum? This is a good matchup of NFC teams that could find themselves in a playoff position.
Seattle has impressed me. Yeah. Their defense has been really good. Russell Wilson's awesome. I'm going Seahawks.
Are you? I don't know. I this line opened at -1.5 for the Rams, which is actually where I think it probably should have been and should still be. So from a line standpoint, I feel like I got to go Rams. I got to take the points. We'll see who was right. We'll talk about it tomorrow. One of us will be gloating. We'll see you in 23 hours, friends.